Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. We are going to be talking about a topic that is near and dear, and we've spoken about many times on this show before, is about medications, the need for them, the not need for them, the adverse effects, and when things go down that wrong road, what really happens. It is just something else, you know. People are so willing to say, when you go into the doctor, they've gotten down the dialogue, either what it says on a commercial or what it says on the internet, and they're like, Doc, I have A, B, C, D, and they've all memorized it and written it down so that the doctor will be forced to give you what you've come in there and asked for. And once you get it and you go home and you don't ever ask, is this for now? Is this for 2 weeks? Do I finish this prescription? Or, hey, is this for 6 months? Or do I just use up the refills? How about this? No, it's for the rest of your life once you've put your hand on it. Nobody asks the questions, and that's what we always talk about. When you go into the doctor, are you really exposing what's really going on with you? Or are you just saying the outward effects, or are they just seeing what they think is wrong with you and then giving you the drug? Really confusing around health care these days. You know, not sure the answers. I don't think there are any answers. I really think that it's up to you to be able to decide what's for your body, how to get your body in shape, and how to make those changes. You know, healthcare has really been a victim kind of situation in the past several decades. We've grown more and more to the thoughts that I'm going to go in, they're going to fix me because I've got to go on a cruise tomorrow. Hey, doc, you better do it because if you don't do it, I'm going to go to somebody else tomorrow. You know, that little blackmail and threat and victimhood. Got to all kick that to the curb, people, because it's really all about you. All of those are other systems outside of yourself. What are you doing for you? Today, my guest is Cynthia Darling. She's written a great story. The book is called Shunned, Outcasts in the Land. And I really want her to tell us about the story because I think it will resonate with so many different people. And it really is... it's a really riveting story, but you say, oh, that's not me. But this piece might be, that piece might be, oh, that could be me in my darkest thoughts. Or maybe, I've seen that act out before. Just never know. So, Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, I couldn't be happier to be here and talk about this.
Well, thank you so much. Could you share, Cynthia, a little bit about your work? I know you've done a lot of things in the past, and I'm sure the listeners would love to know how you actually got to this point to write this book.
Well, I always wanted to write, but, you know, unfortunately in life it doesn't pay that much. So I worked for the federal government for a long time and was trained as a social worker and worked in a mental institution, and all of those things sort of played into the book. But what I really loved and what I still love in my life is to write a good story and to take the elements of what I've actually seen in my own life and then make it into a fictional story. So the book itself, you know, is labeled fiction. It's not a how-to-get-off-drugs book. But I did have in my own life a story that just riveted me, and that had to do with my son, who, when he went to college, was having anxiety about getting up and speaking before 100 people, and he had to do it. So he went to the counselor at the university, and like so many times today, this guy dispensed a bottle of pills, and they were antidepressants. And he said, just take these. He didn't say how many to take. He didn't say when to stop.
Right.
And my son started to take them, and guess what? He felt better. You know, he felt fantastic. When he was coming home, he felt just wonderful. I couldn't see. I was really ignorant as everybody else. I couldn't see. And I didn't know that when 2 years later these side effects were coming to him, the tingling of the hands, and some of you, I'm sure, know all these things, the shaking of your hands, the varying of moods. With my son, it was aggression, you know. He'd like to go out and beat everybody up if he could. So I just began to think, there's something wrong with this boy. And never dawned on me that it could be some kind of outside influence coming in. So I began to write because of that. That was the first story that I actually wanted to write, because I'd seen the misery and I'd seen the hell when he tried to get off the medication. It was he was in his bedroom for, I would say, a summer. And I just, as mothers do, you know, I just cried and couldn't figure out what to do. And no doctor helped me. No doctors would say, put him back on it. So that's the beginning of the story. And it's no mystery that the person I killed off in the story was a counselor. So, you know, I got everything out I needed to in that story.
You know, I really think so many people are very naive about medications. Mm-hmm. As I've said in the beginning of the show, you know, people just think, hey, it's a pill. They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I even can tell you, you know, from many stories that were related to me, that people would say, oh, gosh, I don't know. I went to the ER and I got out of there. They gave me about 20 drugs in there. They gave me 10 prescriptions to take home.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I finished them all, and when I'm all done with them, then I should be fine. When really I think that the mentality of the people of prescriptions is really based upon the old concepts. If you look at when we grew up, I'm almost 60. When it was in the 50s and the 60s, the concept was about antibiotics. That was our first real introduction to getting drugs very commonly all the time, and with no questions asked, you were given it. But that was the basis with antibiotics. You take the drug. If it says refills, you get them. You finish them, then you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that that mentality has stuck and gone forward in generations, where people are basing all of these thoughts and how they're taking other prescriptions upon that ritual and that habit that happened so many decades ago.
And I think we used to, especially in my mother's era, she thought that a doctor was a god. And if a doctor said, take 20 pills of so-and-so, my mother would do anything. If he said, jump off the bridge, mother would do that. But the times have changed when we have to learn to be our own person who decides our fate. Not to say that you don't approve of every medication that you need, but to look carefully at all these things and to think about it, particularly the ones that change your brain chemistry and where does that lead? Does it lead to making someone more violent? Who knows? All the vicious things that have happened today, the shootings, the horrible things that really didn't happen when I was growing up, you have to ask yourself a question. Why is that happening now? What's different now than it was, say, 30 years ago? What's different? And I'm not a reporter or a doctor or a researcher, but I can see patterns in my own life and in the life of my family, and it really concerns me.
You know, we notice it so much here in the South. I live in New Orleans, and now we're 10 years out of Katrina, and Hurricane Katrina, and what we find is that there's a lot of violence, and most of the violence in the city is by young men who are of the ages under 25 or so, we would say. And generally, if you look back at 10 years ago in their life, where were they? They were struggling through the storm. And when parents, after the storm, were not able to take care of their children's needs, so they were not able to say that everything's going to be okay. They were pretty much on their own survival load. When you're on your own survival load, your kids kind of fall by the wayside and they don't feel cared for, loved, taken care of, and all that other stuff. That's how they end up when they get older, thinking that the world is not a safe place and they play out a different path. We see this quite a bit when the new ACEs that is up study, and it's adverse childhood experiences. And when people have all of these experiences in their life, they say, these are going to influence you in your life. But then they also say, well, then those kids have to be medicated. Then those kids have to be shut down. Then those kids are going to be troublemakers. So it's sort of like once you put a label on someone, you're kind of, for lack of a better word, you're really stuck, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we can just work through things and get rid of some of those labels, in other words, if you weren't cared for when you were younger, you can be cared for, learn how to take care of yourself when you're older, and then be able to go forth and take care of others. It's not like it's I'm going to constantly rebel because I didn't get something in the past.
Mm.
So sometimes when, you know, people are put on antidepressants, they say my life isn't working. Well, okay, so your life isn't working, so a pill's going to make it work?
Yeah.
Probably not. You know, or if you look at them again, they say, well, I'm having a sad day. Someone had said to me at one time, they said the depression, it's, I said, what, how was your day? And they said, I had a sad day. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, it's a depression. And it's a label.
Yeah.
And it's giving control of something or someone else to it.
Yeah.
And when you give up that control so many times, sometimes you can't really look at maybe there is something that's bothering me, but sometimes we're so afraid to say it, just like you said in the beginning. You know, we don't see these things all the time with people. We don't see that they may be having a struggle, or they might be on a path that they don't want to be, or something might be affecting them. And rather than exposing that hurt or that need or that want inside of themselves, they try to over-medicate themselves. And I think really that's what we've come to in this, quote, over-medicated society.
Yeah. You know, now that you're speaking of this, and my mother and her brothers and sisters grew up in Mississippi. And I saw a survey, and I'm not sure if it's true. The research said that a high number of women during the 20s and 30s in the South were into drugs of one kind or another, given by the doctor.
Right.
You know, a little spoonful of this, a little paragaric was one of my mother's favorites. And those things kind of come back to my mind now, thinking, well, you know, we've had this for a long time. We're just the tip of the iceberg. There were other things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And still no one knew how to handle it. No one, people were ashamed of it, but no one knew how to handle
right.
it. And today, at least I think we're trying to pull it out into the open and to say, you know, this is something we need to talk about, and I don't necessarily have to take my own doctor's advice to take a whatever it is he gives me in terms of being a tranquilizer or an antidepressant. You know. I was sitting in the
right.
waiting room, and this isn't in my book, but I heard this these really beautiful girls that seem to get hired as drug representatives, and they have a nice mm-hmm. little bag, suitcase, and they go in to see the doctors, and they're so attractive and so pretty, and they're selling pills. And the pharmaceutical groups hire them. And I heard this girl come in, and she said to the administrative assistant in the doctor's office, you know what, we've got this sale on so-and-so, so-and-so, and it's because we're having trouble with people pushing that kind of drug. And she said, the administrative assistant said, oh, I think I can help you out on that. And she said, because, you know, we are offering a cruise for the
right.
place that sells the most of these drugs. And I just sat back there in the back, you know, quietly thinking, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my dear.
You know, it's absolutely incredible where we've come in society. You know, when I think back, if you've ever watched that show, Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah.
About ancestry.
Yeah.
And you can go back decades and decades and decades ago and even centuries. And if you look back, you know, women were very, very difficult life in all of these centuries, because a lot of the women, you know, there was a lot of syphilis, there was a lot of pain, there was a lot of sexually transmitted diseases. The men, you know, they just, they had their own libations to be able to shut down the pain with liquor and stuff. Mm-hmm. But these women ended up with getting cocaine and other drugs and morphine.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got those, they ended up taking those to shut down the pain. And then they ended up maybe in the 30s and 40s starting to seek out rehab to get off of these.
Yeah.
And then you look at, you know, were women always in that position? And I think men were also. We're not, you know, striking here at either chord of either gender. But we do say is that life was tough before. And life, we think, is a little bit easier with medications. However, now we've come to the pinnacle of that maybe too much medication, and maybe we need to start sliding off of that.
Mm-hmm. Lots of questions in society today, and people don't even seem to be looking toward what the effects of all these things are. They don't seem to really want to see it. I know I had a call from a nurse, school nurse, and she was just overwhelmed in her job by the number of kids that come in and that are already on medication by the time she got them in first grade. And they're just, I don't know how many. And she said that something like 65% of the children in the elementary school were given prescription drugs. So the thing is, I'm not saying that maybe some of these aren't true cases, but I'm saying that we don't look anymore. If it's on a piece of white paper, it's a prescription, you know, that's the way it goes. Everybody's got to have it. So it is, it's a burden that we're going to carry, and we're going to have to carry into the future. And that really
I think until we say no more, and then it's a time of saying, you know, we are all out there saying, well, we don't want processed food, or we don't like these fast food places,
right,
or we don't want all these toxins in our food, yet we still turn around and still demand the drugs and the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really there are, times are changing. It's a little bit slow. And really what we do here on this radio show is about opening up the door and saying, is there a possibility that maybe that might not work for you? Is it a possibility that maybe this is something you should look at? Is it a possibility that maybe that hurt inside yourself you can start looking at, and maybe it's not just always a drug. Maybe not. It's always just, I've got a pain in my shoulder, and, you know, I just have to keep taking these because I've just got to be going on. And then you turn around and you add your lifestyle habits to it, which can be your going out and socializing and drinking. And then furthermore, it could be that, you know, you want to go out with peer pressure and, hey, I'm going to go do bungee jumping today, but I've got my drugs and they're going to take care of my shoulder. So really about being responsible for our bodies and taking care of them instead of still giving it up to someone or something else.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we seem to care more about gluten-free environments than we do about the other pills that we put in our mouths. It's funny.
Yeah, it's so interesting, you know. And I think people, too, sometimes when you look at is the need for, let's say we would say medical insurance, people talk about that all the time. People will say, I'm not going to go to the doctor because, you know, I don't have medical insurance. Well, sometimes if you look back at some of those things, they'll say, but you know what, I could have gone, but I don't really need to, you know. And sometimes when you have that gold little ticket card of insurance, you say every little thing that hurts, you're going to go to the insurance and you're going to go to the doctor and you're going to get that drug. You know, little do you know that by the time you reach 60 or 70, if you look at the diagnosis codes on the top of your chart, you're going to have 10 or 20 diagnoses on there that just never come off. With the new EMR records, you know, electronic medical records, those things stack up.
Yeah.
It's not like they can go in and knock them off. They stack up. They're in that database somewhere. So I've even related of a story at one time, is that a person, they had gone to the emergency room and they had heart palpitations and they weren't feeling good and everything. And they got labeled as having a high heart rate or high, and then a little resident had come in and put in high blood pressure. Well, when you have a high heart rate, sometimes you're stressed out, you're going to have higher blood pressure. And they tacked it on. And that person lived with that for many generations. And what happened was, decades. And what happened was is that the person went back to the emergency room for something else, like a kidney stone or something. Well, the first drug that they got when they walked in was, oh, I see on your record it says high blood pressure. You have high blood pressure again today, so we're going to give you a high blood pressure medication.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, what? I have high blood pressure today because I'm stressed out because I got a kidney stone for the last 3 days.
Right.
You know? So in other words, the thoughts in our minds, the lab tests and diagnoses, and the pharmaceuticals that we're given are three different sector towers. And sometimes, you know, they're supposed to mesh together and give us answers, but sometimes they are such in contrast that the reader is just saying, take the cream off the top and let's just get on with it. And that's how I think people get so over-medicated.
I'm sure this has happened to a lot of people, but I went in the doctor's office and you get that white coat syndrome where your blood pressure goes up, you know, when you're in that kind of situation. So he wanted to immediately say, I'm going to give you the lowest dose of blood pressure medication, and I was really reluctant. But what my husband and I started doing was we did our own blood pressure readings for a couple of months before we'd have our appointment. And guess what? It was fine. I didn't take the medicine. And I know that if he knew this, he'd not be happy. But I felt that it wasn't correct to judge me on one instance, as you said, about a person going in an emergency room. You're going to have highs. You're going to have highs sometime or other in your pressure. But now, you know, I haven't taken it for years. And yet that little mark that he put on my record, recently I had a broken bone, and those records were sent over. And the first thing the doctors asked me was, oh, I see you're on blood pressure medication.
Correct.
And I said, no, I'm not. But nevertheless, it's there. Whatever you put in your mouth or you use, it's going to be following you, especially now in the days of the easiness in getting your records. So it's just you just have to be your own advocate. You know, you really have to be your own advocate.
Are you feeling despair or overwhelmed by your health or everyday life situations? Do you know what questions to ask and how to get help? Don't go it alone. Ask for help. Dr. Jeanette offers compassionate and comprehensive advocate support for health challenges. To download her free report, How to Get the Healthcare You Deserve, go to her website, www.drjeanettewellness.com. Anyone who downloads the information tonight will receive a complimentary 15-minute personal needs analysis consult with Dr. Gallagher for questions and answers. That website again for the free report download and free consult is www.drjeanettewellness.com. Just reach out and ask for help.
Let's talk a little bit about your book, Shunned, Outcast in the Land, because in this book you do talk about, you know, what happens when people start to speak out. What happens and how risky is it? And is it really, in other words, do you have the label on your, as we call it, your derriere, to say that you're going to be an activist? Are you an activist for your family members? Are you an activist to be able to shut down companies? Are you an activist to be able to say there needs to be a change in the world?
Yeah.
Or are you an activist for the victims or the people that really can't stand up for themselves? And I think sometimes there's so many different aspects to look at there, because when you look at, are you an activist for what? And if those do kind of mesh into different things, sometimes your goal might be sidelined, but and you may take a few hits along the way. And I think your book is very clear about that.
Well, you do. The mother in this story, you know, had decided she was going to throw, I've forgotten what it was, against the glass windows of the pharmaceutical company. That was the extreme.
The red paint.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I'd forgotten what it was. She ended up, in jail, which people do because that's what happens when you do acts like that. For me personally, I think maybe I'm probably more of a chicken than that, but for me it's the telling the story to other people that I feel helps me be an advocate. But writing is a wonderful way to put something down for another generation or for another group of people you'll never know. And you never know how people are going to react. So I feel that in some sense I am an advocate, but I'm not pounding the street or, confronting my doctor very much. I'm pretty mild about that. I think he'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. I did give him the book, but I doubt very much if he read it. So.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you're an advocate, you can speak out and you could still hold yourself safe. Sometimes when you're an activist, you end up putting your life on the line and yourself on the line, which really in your book, that was more of an activist, I think. They were really going to institute change no matter what.
Years ago, there was a book that influenced me a lot. It was Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, that you might remember. It was about exposing the meatpacking industry, which was a horrible place 70-some years ago, just an awful place.
Right.
That book completely turned around what happened and was responsible for laws being put in for the cleanliness of our meat and the humane treatment of animals. And I thought about that. That was called muckraking. And I thought, well, that's really what I would like to think I'm doing about the antidepressant industry. I don't hate all those people, but I think somebody needs to open the door and take a look inside once in a while.
Yeah, and also, too, to say that the world is changing. We get stuck into the paradigm that we believe, as we've said, that the doctors are God, that the prescriptions are this, golden coin in the world that's going to, quote, fix me. We think that mental health talk therapy is going to change the entire world and we're going to be good to go. When it does definitely work, we are not ever saying this, it's just across the board. It does definitely work for many people, but there are some people who probably shouldn't be on that road, and those are the ones we're talking about, is that they shouldn't have been on that road in the first place. And they're kind of getting into some of these paradigms that might not work for them.
Yeah.
It's sort of like saying, maybe that I've got a label on my back and I'm taking I've got this diagnosis and I'm taking these drugs for it, but maybe if you had gotten a second opinion or a third opinion, you might not be in that same boat because it might not even be that that's what was wrong with you. And so many people will say, I go to the doctor every year, nothing's wrong with me, and all of a sudden, hey, I went in for a cold and all of a sudden I'm going to die in 6 months. So there's a lot of things out there, not to instill fear, but to instill awakening and saying, I'm in control, I can wake up, I can pay attention, I can open my eyes, I can say, I'm not feeling right today, and let me think about it, and let me see how I wish to be able to go forward on that. And I think that's where a lot of people are stuck.
I had a funny sort of, as an older woman, I had a broken bone and went to the doctor. I ended up in a rehab, but they asked me to fill out the form, what medications do you take? Well, the only thing I actually take is Bonevo, which is a sort of osteoporosis preventive thing. And the young intern kept saying to me, well, at your age, he said, you're not telling me that that's all you take.
Right.
That's all I take. Well, that's highly unusual. I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't disappoint you, but I don't. If I had had cancer, I might have been taking some kind of drugs to fight that, but I didn't have anything but the Boniva, which I take once a month. And he just kept me. Finally, at the end, he came over to me and said, I just want to tell you, we've never had a woman at your age who has come in with so few drugs. I said, well, I'm going to take that as a compliment. Maybe you think I'm lying, but I'm not. I'm telling the truth. I might lie about my weight a little bit here and there, but I'm pretty careful not to lie about the medications anyway. So,
it's a tough place to be when you're actually telling the truth and you're kind of they kind of have that question about it, and sometimes you get labeled as a resistant patient. But, you know, that's so true. So many people are really taking their health into their own hands now, and they are feeling better, and they're not accepting those refills on those prescriptions that they probably don't need anymore. And they are saying, hey, doc, I'd love to see you every year, but maybe I'm not going to anymore. You know, maybe I'm going to choose a different path, a different pattern, and a different doctor. Sometimes it's the doctor that you may have to change from. Sometimes it's the paradigm that you need to change from, you know, or sometimes you need to say, I'm not going to go always in there like a victim and just saying, gimme, right?
Yeah. What do you think about these ads that have the 20,000 side effects of every drug that comes on every 2 minutes? I mean, do you think people actually believe that those side effects are real, or do they just say, no, let me just write the name of this drug down and I'll take it or something?
Yes, they are so not looking at, they don't look at the side effects at all. I mean, we look at college students so many times. You know, I think the biggest red flag when a parent sends the child off to college should be to pull out every single black box indications or all of the side effects of all of the prescriptions that they're sending their kids to school with and showing them and having them read them and having them sit there and digest that before they go off. Because, you know, people are taking diabetes medications. People are taking sometimes antidepressants. People sometimes are just taking hormone medications or whatever it might be, or sometimes muscle or pain or whatever, and you send these kids off to college, and then you add on illegal, illicit drugs, and you add into it alcohol and stress no sleep and peer pressure. And if you add all of these together, you really are exploding a volcano. I mean, really, it is a tough place to be. But there again lies, you know, gosh, you know, when I look back at my 18-year-olds, they were in no way, shape, or form an adult being able to make an informed decision on all of these drugs, you know. But yet we give them to them when they're under 18 because it's our responsibility as parents. But then we push them out at 18. We expect them to, hey, just pick up that Olympic thing, you know, that fire, and just keep going on. And it's like they really just don't get it.
I think if something in your life becomes different, if a loved one begins to, say, be very much more violent than they used to or have some personality change, people generally tend to think of that as a mental health issue. But I would also say, open your eyes a little bit. You don't know what they're taking. You don't know that these drugs can also provoke different personality kinds of effects. And I think we all need to look at that. We all know that drinking will do that. We all know there's a mean drunk out there that you don't want to have anything to do with because it's the drug that causes it. But we don't think about the medication that might have the same effect.
And I think around the holidays is really a tough time for a lot of people because these kids come home and either they've bought a lot of their drugs, you know, that can last the holiday season while they're home on break. But then towards the end of the holiday season, you know, they're kind of getting cranky. They can't wait to get back to school because they might be running out of their meds, you know. And we don't even think about that. Or when they come home for the holiday, they say, oh, I can't wait to be here. Or, you know, it's the best place. It's the best thing, like, since sliced bread. And all my friends are here and blah, blah, blah. And they start intermixing. And things really get tough on holidays time.
Yeah, that's a good point, definitely. For not only students, but for the families as well. The tensions are riding high. One little pill is going to make me feel better, right? So I'll go do it.
Right. It's really tough.
We have to be on guard all the time. You know, in itself is a big job just to notice. And I do think sometimes women are probably better at noticing, picking up on clues. For instance, there's an instinct that even long before they used to talk about child sexual abuse, women had some sort of instinct about protecting their child. And that kind of got squashed, you know, and you didn't really want to count on your instinct. But I think all of us really need to open that back up again and to say, something's not right. Something's wrong. I don't know what it is. I can just sense it. and to be aware of that in yourself. And I think it will help us find out really what's going on more, I hope.
Yeah, and I think we've reached, as we've said along this show, is that we've reached a pinnacle in life where parents are so overtaxed themselves, either on their own libations or whatever that might be, their own prescriptions, their own life, their own schedule, and, you know, society is so demanding these days that sometimes those parents don't see anything. And many, oftentimes you will see in the media, they'll say, the parent didn't, I didn't know it, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't recognize it. I was so tied up with my own life. It just seemed similar to my life. You know, they were both on such a high, they just didn't think that it was maybe not good for them to be in a high. And then what you see is the tables turn, and something happens to the child, and you see the tables turn, where the parents then have to start looking at themselves and say, how did I contribute to this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is my life doing? Am I going down the sinker too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And many times you'll see things start to evolve and change in generations, which is really what we want going forward.
Yeah.
We don't want anyone harmed. We want everybody to start waking up and seeing how is this wheel getting greased and how are we participating in each other.
As we've said before, you know, if you start looking like on the program, who do you think you are? If you start going back into your family history, chances are you're going to find something. It might be the paragoric of another era. It might be a little opium given or laudanum or whatever they used to give, a little
mm-hmm.
something that somebody back in the back times did begin to take. Not because you can say, well, we have a history of it, therefore I can't control it. Or, you know, like some people say about alcohol, mm-hmm. I can't control it because my grandparents did it. Well, I don't think so. I think you can control. You do have some ability
mm-hmm.
to take it into your own hands and not just to say, well, I'm just a victim of fate because my parents
mm-hmm.
did this. I don't believe that. I think you're far more than that, you know. But you gotta,
and I think that's where we're at, is about that we are far more than that, and we're not our labels, we're not our history, we're not what we were born into. We can always make changes, be it very tough. And you could say that one change in your entire life is really the reason you were here, is to make that change. And for people to say, but there's got to be more in life, or I have to make 100 changes. Make one, you know, maybe you'll come back in the next lifetime and you'll make another one then, you know. There's always that rush to perfection, but what really is perfection, you know? And it's really just about participating today and doing the best you can today, and that's what we're really talking about.
Well, it's not, you know, heaven knows that there's enough pain to go around for all of these things, but I think of how many kids and how many wives and how many husbands have suffered through alcohol use, and how little we've ever done about that. You know, we just have said, well, everybody's entitled. And this, and yet they don't talk about medication the same way. Alcohol, we know, is not good for you, but people are really reluctant to say, well, the other is medication, right? I mean, it's got to be good for you because it's labeled medication. And just because somebody in a doctor's office gives you Oxycontin for your pain that you have doesn't mean that you have to be dependent on it and rely on it the rest
mm-hmm.
of your life. But I think that it's that mindset of, oh, no, this is not really bad. This is good stuff. And until we kind of stop thinking that, we're not going to change.
And I think also, too, when they give these prescriptions, you know, you see people in their 30s and 40s on television, and they say, well, they're taking their opiates right now, and it's in their 30s and 40s for pain. And you think they're going to be taking those suckers for the rest of their life,
yeah.
And now they're going to have all these other side effects. And really they're saying, what I'm doing is running from pain. What is the pain you're running from?
Yeah.
And so many say, but my arm hurts, my back hurts, this, that, or the other. Well, you are getting yourself into a soup, and I think that's what you and I are really trying to say, is that wake up, listen to what it might be saying to you, and see what you can possibly do differently. And if you keep going back to the same facilities, the same helpers that are supplying these to you, they'll always want to give you the same thing, because it's almost like when you're going out and you're buying your illicit drugs on the street, hey, they want a satisfied customer. You know, they can't wait to see you. They know you. They know your routine. They're going to meet you on that corner every day that you pass at 8:45, you know, in the morning. So, you know, and then all of the other drug pushes, they're going to meet you at your annual checkup. They're going to meet you, hey, no, come back in 3 months and see me. So, in other words, the flow is always there. It's just your choice whether you want to engage in the flow.
Yeah. When my son really came to realize these terrible effects that antidepressants were having on the violence that he was experiencing and the fast driving, oh, I'll never forget it, the willingness to want to go out and, you know, hit somebody who did something wrong. And when he finally realized that this wasn't right, he went to the doctor and said, I need to get off these. And the doctor's response was, well, you see, that's just simply, these things that are happening are simply symptoms of your basic anxiety that's causing all of this. It couldn't possibly be the medication, right? Couldn't possibly. So he would say, I just think I need to up your dose to give you more medication.
Right.
Therefore, you won't experience that. So you up your dose for 3 or 4 months, and then you've reached another plateau where you're even worse. And no one in the experiences that I've had has ever said, you're right, it's going to be hell to get off it, but I'm your doctor, and I'm going to see if I can help you in the best way I can to get off, help you get off it. I've never had anybody say that. I wish I had, to, for my son's sake, but that just didn't happen. So he had to do it on his own, and it was hell.
At this time, we're going to take a short break, as I'd like to share a product that I've been taking since December 2015, and I really feel the benefits every day. I'm sharing it because I really believe we need to start taking a few steps to improve our own health without waiting for someone to always tell us what to do. With heart and blood vessel complications these days, I really believe it's high on my list of what to take today. And so I hope you take a minute to check out the link following the Cardio Miracle information.
Attention all women over 50 who are feeling listless and tired. Are you constantly hitting a wall? Are your day-to-day activities wearing you out? We have great news. Take control of your health and empower your body with a new exclusive formula of vital nutrients and antioxidants. Our product, Cardio Miracle, is an alternative health option that can improve your general health and give you that much-needed natural energy so you can accomplish everything on your to-do list without feeling exhausted. Cardio Miracle can help you to have the energy and power you need to deal with all the lumps, bumps, and general chaos of life. It's called Cardio Miracle because it improves your heart health while giving you natural energy and important vitamins and nutrients your body craves. Statistics tell us women are at a high risk for a cardiac event. Please inform yourself as options are available. Discover more about this new product at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette, spelled all in lowercase, DrJeanette. Thousands of women like yourself, including Dr. Jeanette, have blessed their bodies and their hearts with the restorative power of Cardio Miracle. Learn more at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette. That's cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette.
Oh.
And you've written about all of this in the book, and the book again is Shunned, Outcast in the Land, where, you know, all of the revelations along the book of, you know, waking up, paying attention, maybe I should have done something differently, and what can I do now, is really the process. I mean, writing the book is your activist process where you wanted to get information out there and say, it's time to wake up, and I think it's a great idea to be able to read this book and say that.
Always wanted to write, and I'm thank God I'm out of the government and I don't have to write 3-syllable words anymore that I don't feel like writing. But I wanted to say, this is a story. This is not always true, but it gave me the greatest pleasure to want to. It's also a murder mystery. It gave me the greatest pleasure to kill off the people that I wanted to kill, and I think that was my therapy right there. When you're writing something on paper, you can do anything you want to those people. It's great.
Yeah, but also, too, you can do it on paper, but you know that if you look at it, a lot of these systems have played out, right? In real life. You can come and say, did you see that on the news? I can't believe that happened, when that probably was what a lot of people think about, right?
Or that, you know, I'm no expert in any of it, but you watch TV and you say, why did this guy who had 5 years in Iraq and now he's on 30 different medications, why is he acting the way he is? It's just something we need to think about, but we don't spend much time doing it. Why did this shooting occur? I'd like to know, every time we have some mass violence, was this person on something when he did it? I'd just like to know that, but it doesn't seem to happen. We don't ever know that. Is it possible that all the things that he's taking had some effect on him? You know, there are just so many instances in daily life that, you know, as I said, I spent a little time in rehab this summer, and I saw all elderly people just, they get that nighttime meds, and they're gone. They're asleep for 8 hours, and everybody's happy. Is that really necessary? Maybe in some cases, and maybe others it isn't. And that's like it's manipulating in a way, you know, part of society. So I think we use the less advantaged, you know, the elderly or the person who's experiencing troubles in his life. We, without meaning to, we use them as sort of a society we're going to put under, and that won't bother us. But what I think we've done is just the opposite. We haven't put them under. We've made things worse.
And, you know, I think sometimes when we look at the elderly, I can remember the elderly with my grandparents and stuff. It was different than what I see the elderly now. Mm. But right now, the elderly now, I see there is a very vast parting of the seas. There is an elderly group that 100% taking care of themselves, 100% living every day of their lives, you know, really going out there and grasping every minute. Yet there's the other side where they are just sinking like a, you know, like nobody's business. It's just like there's just no way to plug that ship. It's going down.
Yeah. And that, being in there at night with them, I was so, it was just a terrible feeling. You know, you don't know what to do, and they're taken advantage of. And if some son or daughter decides they'd like to have all their money, for instance, well, guess what? They'd like to have mother or daddy put on medication pretty quickly and get somebody to sign the papers, and everything will be okay. Big burdens. And it's impossible to solve all of this quickly. But as you said, you have to make the first step. Each one of us has to take the first step to question, too. And in the process, as in my book, you may get shunned. You know, it's pretty hard. It's hard for me to go to my doctor and make some statement. It's pretty hard because I don't want him to think I'm an idiot or crazy or whatever. So I try not to do it because I don't want that label. But as I did in the book, society doesn't like when you rock the boat, and especially if you rock the pharmaceutical boat that's got so much money today. It's really hard.
I think it's really our society has become so locked up in this peer pressure that this is the way it's going to be, and I almost feel like right now, society is more like a balloon, that it is just so outstretched. I mean, there's just something that's going to pop. And when that pop happens, it's really going to be up to everybody to take care of themselves because everything will scatter. But right now, you know, it's like how much can you keep putting into things where things are just going to have to fall apart to be able to see what the reality is anymore. And sometimes we don't even know what the reality is anymore. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's times you will say when your kids are, they're just growing up. oh, they're just coming into the who they're going to be. Oh, look at them. Now they resemble their ancestors. Oh, gosh, they're going to go down that same path.
Yeah.
And you think, gosh, you know, did I just label them all that way? Maybe there are other influences there that I didn't even see.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, when they go down that path, yeah, they've been drinking since they've been 10 years old.
Right.
Or they've been taking drugs out of grandpa's medicine cabinet.
Right.
Or, hey, you know, they've been beating up on their dates every single time. You just didn't hear about it, but everybody else in town knows about it. So there's a lot of information there that we really really, as humans, have to start being and saying, you know what, this just isn't going to continue anymore, and I just really need to be an honest, right person, and I need to make a change.
You have to be your own person, and it's easy, I think, to want to rely on somebody else, whether it's a sibling or who, but you really, when it comes right down to it, you're the one that has to stand there and to say, no, I'm not going to go any farther. You're not going to let this happen. But the peer pressure when you're growing up is tremendous. You know, you just want to be like everybody so badly. You want to do what they all do. And then you realize 2 or 3 years later, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
I think peer pressure in adulthood is even more violent than at young to age, because if you ever went into work and said this, that, or the other, or you came home to your spouse and said something, you know, or then your kids would rebel even further, I'll tell you, it's a tough, tough place to be.
Hmm. Yeah, it is. Well, life is really, every day is a challenge, and I think part of overcoming it is that you have to get the awareness before you do anything else, and that's what I felt about the reality of the drug industry, but it's got to be, wait a minute, I'm here today, let me look at the world truthfully, and let me see what I see, and not try to pretend something else, and that's painful.
Absolutely. Well, Cynthia, we have just gone through this time very quickly. I just now notice the time. How about you?
Great, yeah, really. I live in the...
Well, can you... share a little bit about what you'd like your takeaway from the book is. That would be wonderful.
Well, I personally think when people pick up a book, they like a good story. I'm an English major. I went to the College of William and Mary. Reading it and writing is my favorite thing. I've had to do a lot of other things in life just simply because that's life. But I think if you can allow yourself to read a book that's entertaining and fast-moving, and then inside that book you can find something that's useful to you, I think that's what you call a good thing to do. So I would say, I'm not trying to push anything down anybody's throats. I really want you to have a good time reading the book. And if you like murder the way I seem to really have been attracted to it, you'll probably like to read a murder. I like a good murder mystery, and that's what this is. So do that, and then, you know, the message is there. Maybe it's subliminal or something, but that may be something you'll come away with, and you'll know what to do with it.
Can you share with us how to find out more information about you? That would be great.
Well, I have a website called Shunned, My Book, and my name is Cynthia Darling, and people love that name, Darling. They always, it sticks in their mind, and that's fine with me. I'm happy with that. So I have a website, and actually I've written 4 books, all that have to do with things that happened in my own life. I was social worker on an Indian reservation, Fort Apache in Arizona, and I have another mystery that takes place there. I loved working out there, loved working with Apache people. And I have another one. I've had a whole lot of things in my life, but I used to live in Georgetown, which is part of Washington, D.C., and, you know, where you see all these famous people opening their beautiful doors. But I wrote about 2 very different people who were below the radar and wrote about their lives in Georgetown. And right now, what I'm kind of scared about, probably get in trouble for, is a true story, fiction but based on truth, of someone I knew who was called the new Dr. Kevorkian, who did a lot of, he was an anesthesiologist and did a lot of choosing to decide whether, which one of all the people that visited him were going to live or die. And that one I didn't like to read. I didn't like to write it. I kind of really don't, but it was a story. It's a story that had happened in my life. And what I'm doing right now, being retired in the government, is I'm writing stories that I begin to think, oh, you know, that happened to me. And I want to tell that story. I want to leave that story with somebody else. So not the last one, not very happy, but I'm going to keep going, I think, unless they put me in jail or something. I don't expect
then,
to do
then,
that.
Then you'll be an actor right out of your shunned book, huh?
I can write something from jail. Right. Oh, I hope not. That won't be, but... Anyway, I'm going to keep on, and I'm not going to take any medications that I can help, and maybe that'll keep my brain alive, too. That's a thought, a good thought. I have a lot of friends as they get older now who are having a few more problems, and thank God I haven't had that.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you with us today, and I think there's a lot of inspiration we talked about today, just to kind of wake up people and say, is this true for me? Is this not true for me? And maybe should I start paying attention? And I think that was the gold in today's show.
Yeah, and I hope so. I very, very much hope so for everybody. Thank you so much
for joining us.
Enjoy being with you.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Cynthia Darling, and her book is called Shunned, Outcast in the Land, the link is on the bottom of today's show page. You can click on there and you can go directly to her website. And it really is about wake up, you know, those things that you used to do. You know, people always have this phrase, but it's always the way it always is. And we're always going to do it this way. It's always been done this way. Well, maybe you need to kick that phrase to the curb and start growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.